Welcome to Veterans Voices UK, the podcast where we share the stories of British military veterans from across the generations. In each episode, we bring you the voices of those who served our country, from the heroes of the Second World War to those who fought in more recent conflicts. But these aren't just war stories, they're stories of life and the profound impact that service had on those who lived through it. I'm Matt Lim, and today I'm privileged to share an interview I made with Arthur Perkins, recorded just weeks before his 100th birthday. This was part of the research I did for my book, We Will Remember World War II Veterans. And despite his age, Arthur was kind enough to share his time with me. In this episode, we'll learn about Arthur's early life and his family in his hometown of Nottingham, and the stories he heard as a young boy from his uncle who fought in World War I, and how a childhood accident possibly saved his life when he was conscripted in 1942. We'll also hear about his time in Egypt and his transition back to civilian life after the war. So thank you for listening to Veterans Voices UK. Now let's hear from Arthur Perkins as he takes us back to the 1920s.
My father was William, and he called him Bill the borer, because he was bored down the pit. My granddad was William, so they called him William, and the borers called me Arthur. And then my mother was a dyer for Station Street in Nottingham, and she used to take me across to my grandma's at 29 Deptford Street, 7 o'clock in the morning, and leave me there till she come home. My dad was a miner. He did enlist into the Goldstream Guards at 1916, but he ran there a day because he was a miner and they wouldn't take him in, put him on the reserves, but because they wanted more coal than they did reservists. Yeah, he worked down the pit 40-odd years. My mother was born in Bull on Main Street, and I do believe my dad was born in Bull, but I don't know where. They were both Bullites. My mum's name was Ada, another name, May Maud or something, but we always called her Ada, so that was it. And of course, my dad was William Arthur. Bill served in World War I, and he was lucky to be alive, because he always told us the same tale. He was injured. He fell into a shell hole, and he was laying in the shell hole when the Germans come past. About six or seven of them. They stopped and seen him, and one of the Germans picked his rifle up to shoot him, and the officer knocked it out of his hand. He says, "We don't shoot injured people." And that's why he always tells us that tale, and that's why he come back alive. My eldest uncle, he joined the police force in 1920, but he was in Basford when he got mobbed by five yobs. And that called him Yobs. And he was only 20, about 21, I think. But he never done a day's work after that for the police. And he did not die until he was turned 90.
As I sat chatting with Arthur, I couldn't help but notice that part of a finger was missing on his right hand. It was only after a while that he looked and he noticed me. And he shared the story of how, as a young boy, he lost that finger.
1937, September, I think it was the 27th of September, Tuesday night, I lost that. I'd had a decent bite and went to my cousin's, Harry. This was four of us took together. I'm going for a bike ride. No, I'm cleaning my bike off. I said, "Oh, all right, Harry, I'll clean it behind then." So I started to clean mine, turned it upside down, got a piece of rag on my finger, and then I turned it in. Went round the cove, and that's what I went into my auntie's. Look what I've done, and I'm winding it round. Had another aunt, she fainted. She fetched tea, who was a cousin of ours who was living with Grandma, and she come, and she'd had a bit of experience in first aid. Oh, she lapped it up, and my cousin went round on his bike, brought my dad, and we jumped on the tram and went to the hospital. I went to the general hospital, the old general. We sat there from about 8 o'clock when we got there. There till I know it was 11 o'clock when they fetched me into the operating room. I didn't feel anything. 20 minutes, not a bad job. And he finished me in 20 minutes and took my finger off. He said to my dad, he says, oh, we could have saved it, but his finger would have been straight all his life. It would have been no good to him. Yeah, I started work on April 1937, I think. I first started in Bull Dyers, which I presented with Alpha Crown for a week. And then I got a job in Ashwell's Textiles in New Baseford, what we call turning hose, hosiery, ladies' hosiery. Now you check them out, follow them up while they're broke in charge, he put them in. And I used to check them out, just check them off and fold them up best I could. And then I started players in 39. 13th of September 39, that 10 days after the war started. I worked on the top floor, taking stuff down to the warehouse. We used to handle about 1.25 million cigarettes a day, more or less. We used to go in 30,000 at a time. So I used to get 25, well, when I got 18, I got 25 cigarettes every week. I started my smoking. I smoked until 1976, when I went to the hospital. That was down my vaccine too, and they also did my leg. Found then that time, I think it was Tuesday, that I was diabetic. She said, no smoking before you're up. This was the matron. She was right, so-and-so, proper matron. I said, oh, when are you up? Probably a week on Friday. I said, well, that means I ain't got a cigarette until a week on Friday. No, you're not to smoke until it. Oh dear. I got some senior suicides and I chucked them on the desk. I said, oh, I can't smoke them, you smoke. And I ain't had one since. She stopped me and also stopped drinking as well.
With the war raging across Europe, early in 1942, Arthur was conscripted into the army.
I had a letter, 27th of this January, 1942. That was Wednesday, I think. Friday and Saturday, I was in Ireland. Put me in the Inniskilling Fusiliers. Well, I was in with different people. There was quite a few Londoners. I remember one, Vaughan. He was right, and so. He used to go out and get wood and come back. I don't know where he got it from, but we got a decent fire. Because it was damn cold. I finished up at 25th ITC in Northern Ireland at the County Tyrone, Omagh County. Yeah. I left there about May or June, joined the 1st Battalion of the Royal Irish Fusiliers. I was in Hampshire and Burley, I think it was, Burley, Hampshire. The sergeant major come and said, yeah, we were going on the range. I said, oh, well, fair enough. So we all went on the range and I couldn't hit the target. So I was pointed out by the sergeant major and taking me on my own. And he took me on my own on the rifle range and he watched everything I did and I still couldn't hit the target. And he says, you're no good to us. I said, I'm not bothered about you, but you can't fire the rifle to save your mates. You're hopeless. And he says, oh, I'll have you graded. So he graded me B1 from A1. Send me back to Belfast.
The reason for Arthur's poor performance on the rifle range was the childhood injury that left him without a finger. In the next few minutes, he explained to me how he could hold the rifle, but it was unsteady. But given that battalion was preparing for a deployment to North Africa, I had to ask the obvious question. Why wasn't it discovered during your recruits course? After all, you did fire the rifle on your recruits course, didn't you?
No, I didn't. Didn't fire at all in Northern Ireland. We just marched up and down and went on different route marches and all sorts. Before PACS, of course, but we didn't do any. Can't remember doing any rifle training down in Omagh, County Tyrone. They went to North Africa and quite a few didn't get back. Quite a number. And I was in Northern Ireland in the barrack. Back to Belfast, November, I think. November, before they went. Anyway, October, November 1942, I went back to Belfast. I had two or three interviews with different people who were trying to find out what I could do. I told them I was abroad. I'd done a bit of bricklaying, and they tried me with a backman for an officer. That didn't suit.
When I was first introduced to Arthur, he shared a very moving story about the time when he was sent back to Belfast. He told me about a dog he befriended there, and eventually he brought him home back to Nottingham with him. As a soldier in uniform, Arthur could obviously travel free, but on that final leg of the journey, he was somewhat surprised when he had to pay a penny for the dog's bus ticket.
I was in charge of different things, like bricklaying, joinery and that sort of thing. And the dog come to the door and I just chucked in a bit of stuff as I was having my dinner. And after that, he won't leave me. Just an ordinary collie, but he was very, very, very good. He'd do everything I told him. If I told him to sit, he'd sit and that sort of thing. I brought him home on the train to Lawn, and from Lawn to Stranraer, and from Stranraer to Derby. And Derby, I got a bus from Derby to Nottingham, which dropped me off at Bayford Crossings. And from Bayford Crossing, he got the bus, or the trolley, the tram there, I think the tram was finished, but still, I got the transport, the whole upstairs of the dog. I said, okay. And he followed me. Oh, you're free, but I'm trying a penny for the dog. We called him Paddy, and I had him until about 1953, 52, 53. Well, they sent me down to Aldershot, but it was a first aid place where you learnt all different first aid. And I had about 3 or 4 weeks there training as a medical orderly. That lasted quite a while. And suddenly you've been transferred. You're going to 910 Dock Operating Company. And this was going on for the end of 43. I finished up in it in Liverpool, different places. But the main one I thought of was Averley, just outside London. And we'd been made the number one petrol port. Yeah. We did nothing but load petrol. And that's when the doodle bugs got to come over us. So we got 5,000 tonne of petrol underneath us in one ship. We got three ships. And doodle bugs was flying over the top. Transferred me down to Dover. I was stationed in Dover Castle, still loading ships. All different things, ammunition, food, all sorts of things. Wherever it was, reloaded it. And I realised afterwards that was for the invasion. Because it was the beginning of 44, I think it was February, March time, when they went down the invasion. We finished loading, because they got enough, and they sent us to Barry Island.
Arthur remained with the Dock Operating Company for the remainder of the war, playing a vital role in resupplying the liberation of Europe. Then, much to his surprise, in February 1946, he learned that he's being prepared for yet another posting.
I found out I could go abroad, so I finished up in North Africa, 1946, about February time, 46, and they put me in charge of all the MI rooms. I had four different MI rooms because I found out I'd been a medical orderly. So I had a doctor, a little doctor, he was only about 4'4", a Dutch, very, very small, but he was very, very good. And then we had, the doctor and I had four different battalions to go to. So we used to go around and give them the needle for TA, B and TT to give the TT. That's the first one. Leave the needle in, and then the doctor would give them the TAB, which is the important one. That's where I stopped there until November 46. I came back. I got demobbed, and they reckoned up my holidays, as I should have had, because I hadn't had any. And my holidays finished on the 27th of January, which is the date I got called up. 5 years to the day, 1947.
By January 1947, Arthur's final deployment to Egypt had come to an end. Soon after, he was demobbed and made his way back home to Nottingham, returning to Sibby Street. One of the last questions I asked Arthur was about the friendships he'd made during his wartime service, and whether he had any regrets about his time in uniform.
Well, I had three friends. One we called Rhodes, called him Dusty, or Dusty Rhodes. Another one with Bill Street, called him Street, Bill, we left Bill Street. And the third one was Dale, with Bill Street's and doings. I was in England. and I went abroad with them. And they're about the only three or four that I remember that didn't get killed. I mean, Billy Streets and Doug and Dusty Dale, they'll call him in London, and somewhere in London, I'm not sure which. But I never swapped addresses. Decent time, I kept each other company. Times have been enjoyable, other times it wasn't. I probably wouldn't have missed it because it was an eye-opener, we'll put it that way.
I last met Arthur while reviewing the final page proofs for his story in the book. As I sat with him and his wife Tony, they shared with me that they were soon leaving Nottingham and moving to the north of England. A few months later, Tony called me to say they had moved and they had settled in and they were now much closer to their family. Sadly, shortly after, Arthur passed away following a brief illness. He had just celebrated his 101st birthday. But Tony asked that this episode of the podcast should be published, as Arthur would have wanted his story to be told and to be remembered. Before we close, I want to extend my deepest sympathies to Arthur's wife Tony and to her family. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us in hearing Arthur's story. If you've been moved by this episode, I encourage you to explore more episodes on Veterans Voices UK, where we will continue to share the stories of those who answered the call and served their country. Remember, these stories aren't just about history, they're a living legacy. And by listening, subscribing, and sharing the podcast, you're helping to keep these voices alive and ensuring that our veterans and their experiences are never forgotten. So please subscribe to Veterans Voices UK on your favourite podcast platform. Leave a review and share the episode with others who may appreciate Arthur's story. Thank you for being part of our community, and we look forward to having you with us for the next episode. Until then, I'm Matt Lim, and this has been Veterans Voices UK.